Wednesday, January 27th, 2021. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope your year is off to a good start. I hope your family, hope your friends, everyone out there is staying healthy physically as well as mentally. We are happy to have you here with us today on The Dose. And you know, we actually do have a little sports history that took place on this date today. Because back on January 27th in 1894, the University of Chicago played their very first college basketball game. They beat the Chicago YMCA Training School 19-11. Now, the University of Chicago was actually the first basketball team to play like a full schedule of games. They finished the year with a 6-1 record. Kind of sounds like a schedule that the Pac-12 might play this year. But I mean, who knew what college basketball was going to become back in the late 1800s at that time? Think about what the game has evolved into now. There's no way anyone could have seen that coming. And then on January 27th, back in 1952, we actually have an athlete's birthday. He was born in Marcus Hook, Pennsylvania, and I'm pretty convinced this guy changed the world of sports. He changed the way sports are covered. Because while in high school, this guy began dyeing his shoes as part of a dare from his teammates. He was only 5'9". He was a little guy, but he was blazing fast, and he would eventually go to a Division III college in Pennsylvania. He would be drafted by the Houston Oilers in the 15th round of the 1974 NFL draft. But I mean, 15th rounders? Are they going to really make the team? Probably not. And yet, this guy made the team as a special teams returner. He would eventually earn some playing time as a wide receiver too, because this guy was dangerous. He was so fast. And as a special teamer, Billy White Shoes Johnson returned 5 punts for touchdowns. He returned 2 kickoffs for touchdowns in his first 4 years with the Oilers. He also added another 12 touchdowns on offense. He would end up being selected to the Pro Bowl as a kick returner in 75. He was named MVP of the game, during which he returned a punt 90 yards for a touchdown. And he went to the Pro Bowl again in 1977. But here is where Billy White Shoes Johnson absolutely changed sports. And I'm not just talking about football. I'm talking about sports across the board. He changed the game. Because his touchdown celebrations, where he would maybe do some funky chicken, or maybe he would do the splits, he might throw in a little fake spike. Everyone loved his celebrations. Here's the thing, though. This was back in the 70s. You couldn't just go watch them on YouTube. You couldn't turn over to ESPN and see the highlights there. Those things didn't exist. The only place where you could see Billy Johnson's highlights was if you watched Monday Night Football and then you watched the halftime highlights from the games that took place on the previous Sunday. So millions tuned into the Monday Night game and stayed around for the halftime highlights just to see if Billy White Shoes Johnson had scored and done his little dance the day before. And think about it. This is literally how SportsCenter and all of the highlight shows got started. It was off of that halftime highlights model. I mean, we now have the NFL Red Zone, which is geared specifically to just show us scoring plays. And of course, the celebrations that go along with those scoring plays. In fact, at the end of the day on the Red Zone, they show all of the celebrations from the entire day. They show all of the touchdowns from the entire day. We love that stuff. And I have to think a lot of it goes back to a 5'9 special teams returner from Marcus Hook, Pennsylvania. Hey, happy birthday to Billy White Shoes Johnson today. He turns 69 today. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us your favorite touchdown celebration of all time. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, DailyDoseSports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at DailyDoseSports. Maybe you're bored. Maybe you want to talk about touchdown celebrations. Maybe you just want to talk about sports in general, or you have a specific question. Maybe you need a little advice. Send us whatever it is that you have. We will always take the time to get back to you. We just might end up using what you send us on the show. Also, be sure you stop by dailydosesports.wordpress.com if you're not sure where to find the podcast or the YouTube video or even some Daily Dose gear. You can always find everything over at our website. Plus, you can find a little bit of information about the host of the Daily Dose. Hey, and I hate to bring this up. I swear I do because I get it's a really, really stupid holiday. But Valentine's Day is coming fast. And you know you're just doing that online shopping. So that makes it a little bit easier to go find that Valentine's Day stuff, right? But you can just stop by tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear for the people that you love. Got a few new designs over there. Got our Daily Dose football and Daily Dose basketball designs. And if you're ordering clothing, if you're ordering a sweatshirt, a t-shirt, a hoodie, you can pick whatever color it is that you want. You can pick from a number of different Daily Dose logos over there. Make sure you stop by tpublic.com and knock out that Valentine's Day shopping before you get yourself in trouble. And I'm telling you right now, if your significant other has told you, hey, let's not do anything for Valentine's Day. I know it's been a weird year, but let's just take it easy. Let's not spend any money. I'm telling you right now, it is a lie. Do not believe it. You will pay for years if you buy into that lie. Don't do it. Hey, today on the show, we need to talk a little bit about those NFL playoffs that took place on Sunday. The Super Bowl is now set. Going to be talking a little NFL today. Plus, I know we haven't talked a whole lot about basketball yet this season. Going to be taking a very brief look at the NBA and college basketball landscapes and discuss a few things that are happening over there. Plus, I'm going to tell you today why I am currently very angry at the world of college basketball. Going to let you know what that's about. And we have a Daily Dose top five for you today. And I'm telling you right now, it might lean a little bit political, I guess, but it is highly important. You are not going to want to miss that. But first, let's talk about a few things coming out in the world of sports. And of course, the big news of the week is that Super Bowl 55 is now set. And you know, I guess it is only fitting in this weird season that for the first time in NFL history, a team will compete for a Super Bowl title in their home stadium as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will face the Kansas City Chiefs on February 7th at the Buccaneers Raymond James Stadium. Of course, there will be very few fans allowed in the stadium, so I'm not sure there will be that much of an advantage, but here's maybe the bigger news of the week. The Daily Dose went 0-2 in our championship picks.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Not sure that has ever happened. Never fear. We are going to rally and we are going to get the Super Bowl correct. But let's take a look at both of these games because both of these games had some wild twists. They had some wild turns in them, starting off with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going into Green Bay to face the Packers in the NFC Championship game. And I mean, what can you say? Tom Brady did it again. He has never gone to the Super Bowl as a member of a wild card team, and now he has done that too. Now, did he play great? No, not really. I mean, yes, he threw three touchdowns. He also threw three interceptions. But there were a few places that I felt like Tampa won this game over Green Bay on Sunday. First, their offensive line was way better than I expected it to be. Tom Brady was sacked just once. He was hit just four times all day, and the Bucs didn't run the ball all that well, but they ran the ball better than I expected because I thought Green Bay would shut down their run game completely, like not allow any yards. That didn't happen. But the Bucs won this game at the line of scrimmage on both sides. And they won this game on third down. Tampa went 9-for-14 on third downs in that NFC Championship game. 64% on third downs in the biggest game of the year to this point. And on the other side, the Tampa pass rush gave Green Bay problems. Aaron Rodgers was sacked five times. He was hit eight different times. And Tampa's defense just gave Rodgers and the Packers offensive line problems all day long. You know, when the Packers lost starting left tackle David Bakhtiari, we all wondered, can Billy Turner step in and do the job? And last week, he looked very comfortable. Aaron Rodgers didn't get touched. This week, yeah, that went a little bit different because Tampa went at Billy Turner and you could see he was not capable of keeping men in front of him. he got blown by a few times. But of course, if we're going to talk about this game, we have to talk about a few of the big calls in this game. Let's talk about the biggest one. Facing a fourth and goal at the Tampa Bay 8-yard line, trailing 31-23, just over 2 minutes to play, Packers head coach Matt LaFleur elected to go for a field goal and cut the lead to 5 points instead of going for the touchdown and the tie. Okay, I know that Matt LaFleur is getting killed for this decision, especially on social media. I am going to try my best to defend his decision. It won't be easy, but let me try. Matt LaFleur is thinking he doesn't want the game decided on one play. He wants to extend the game as long as he possibly can. So he's thinking, we kick the field goal, we give the ball back to Tampa in hopes maybe they make a mistake, maybe they fumble, or maybe they just can't convert a first down. Maybe they even throw an incomplete pass. Remember, the Packers did have all three timeouts left. They had the 2-minute warning in their pocket. If they went for the touchdown and failed, the game was basically over. So Matt LaFleur is thinking, I don't want it to come down to one play. Now, here is where his thinking is flawed. One, there wasn't that much time left. There were only 2 minutes left. So you have one chance for a stop. The margin for error was just so micro thin. Two, you're playing Tom Brady. And your defense has been giving up third down conversions easier than Paris Hilton on prom night.
How dare you?
Three, you still need a touchdown. That is my biggest problem with this whole scenario. Kicking the field goal didn't tilt the scales in any way because now you still trail by 5 points. So you didn't really gain any ground. If you were down by 6 instead of 8 and you take that field goal, I mean, then at least you only trail by 3. So you could go get a field goal and tie it, but that wasn't the case here. You still had to score a touchdown. Plus, it's fourth down. It's fourth and goal. You have Aaron Rodgers. I mean, at some point, as a coach, you have to get out of the way and just let your players make plays. Put it on them. Don't put it on yourself. And here's the thing. If you didn't get it, you're still in the same position. You still have to score a touchdown. The difference would have been you would have left the Tampa Bay Buccaneers inside their own 10-yard line. So I do believe it was a mistake in thinking by Matt LaFleur. Was it the worst mistake, I don't know, in the history of time, like social media is telling us, like some of the talking hairdos on the sports networks are telling us? No, not quite, but I do think it was a mistake. One more late game call we have to discuss in the NFC Championship game. And we have to talk about the flag that was thrown by the NFL officials on the Buccaneers' final drive of the game. Facing a 3rd and 4 from their own 37, Tom Brady attempted a pass to wide receiver Tyler Johnson. The ball sailed over his head, it was incomplete, and it looked like the Packers might get the ball back with about 1:46 left to play. And then we saw the late flag come in from the refs. The officials ruled pass interference, which of course was an automatic first down, and that pretty much ended the game. Bucks win 31-26. And while I understand the call, I think it was kind of an egregious call, I don't like it primarily because the officials hadn't been making those calls all day. See, they had allowed both teams to play. They, in fact, had allowed the Bucks to get away with a holding call earlier, which resulted in an interception by the Tampa Bay defense. I don't like officials making calls in the last 2 minutes that they weren't making for the first 58 minutes. Because as a coach and as a player, you adjust your play to the calls that they are making. You adjust all game. By the end of the game, you kind of think you have the guidelines down. But then when they flip those guidelines, it makes it a little bit harder. The problem is that I do think the call was so egregious. When you see the jersey stretch out, they had no choice. I mean, the jersey is stretching like a foot and a half. They had to call this. Keep this in mind, though. We talked about Matt LaFleur making a mistake. Remember, Matt LaFleur was this one ref's call away from possibly being a hero. That's how close it was. Now, was this pass interference call the reason the Packers lost? No, it wasn't. In fact, forget the whole end of the game thing. Forget the decision by Matt LaFleur. Forget the penalty. Forget all that. The end of the first half, when the Packers lose track of Tampa wide receiver Scotty Miller, and played that tight bump coverage, but they had no safety help over the top. The Buccaneers were able to take a 21-10 lead into halftime. That play might have been where they lost the game on Sunday. Yes, the late calls didn't help. A couple of things go either way. Those things didn't help. But right at the end of the half, the Packers made significant mistakes there that came back to haunt them too. Let's move over to the second game though. Because the second game on Sunday was the AFC Championship, and we saw the Kansas City Chiefs fall behind early to the Buffalo Bills. And we all wondered, are these Bills maybe for real? And then we all saw, the Bills are improving. They're good, but they're not quite ready for prime time. The Bills actually got a break early in the game. They had a mishandled punt, and they went up 9-0 on the Chiefs. And then the Chiefs and quarterback Patrick Mahomes got rolling and beat the Bills 38-24. You know, one thing I was looking for early, and we talked about it a little bit last week as we previewed this game with Raymond when he came on from DC, I wanted to see if the Bills could put pressure on Patrick Mahomes. And what I really wanted to see, I wanted to see, can they put big pressure on Mahomes early and test his health? Because you could see, as he walked out for the first snap of the game, he's favoring that toe. If he's got turf toe or whatever that is, he was favoring it. You also had to know, he was probably out there going, okay, I feel pretty good, let's see how this goes. They didn't put any pressure on him early. You let him get warmed up, you let him get hot, and then you're in some big trouble. Patrick Mahomes throws for 325 yards. He throws for 3 touchdowns. And again, there were a few things I took away from this game. One, Mahomes is amazing. And he comes up with plays that sometimes don't even make sense. Having said that, I do think a lot of people in the media, a lot of fans in general, get a little bit too excited about what Patrick Mahomes does. Like when he flips the underhand pass, and everyone loses their mind. We've never seen that before. We've seen it before. We've seen it a lot. Like Brett Favre did it his entire career. He did it like once a drive, and that wasn't that long ago. But no question, Patrick Mahomes is great. We also know that wide receiver Tyreek Hill has speed to burn. He is just so dangerous. But the guy that is quietly making the Chiefs offense go is tight end Travis Kelce. Because how is he always open? He's always open. On Sunday, Kelce caught 13 passes for 118 yards. He had 2 touchdowns. And you can say, well, it wasn't that quiet. Well, what has everyone been talking about all week? Patrick Mahomes. But Kelce is his security blanket. And he's just always, always, always open. I haven't seen a guy that always gets open like that since like Rob Gronkowski, Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez in their prime. But Travis Kelce is in that same vein. He just always finds a way to be open, and he always makes himself available for Patrick Mahomes. Even if he's in trouble, he knows Travis Kelce is going to be there. The other thing I noticed in the AFC Championship game, as good as Bills quarterback Josh Allen is, and as much as he has improved over this past year, we could see he kind of reverted back to some of the things he was doing early in his career on Sunday. And sometimes Josh Allen is really, really athletic. He's really, really strong. He's got a huge arm. Sometimes he processes things a little slow. Because how many times did we see on Sunday he was on the verge of getting sacked, and instead of either taking the sack or just throwing it away, he would kind of be indecisive. He would kind of fight the sack and keep looking and go further backward and fight the sack and keep looking and go further backward. And eventually he would lose a ton of yardage on a single play. I'm sitting there watching just going, dude, throw it away. What are you doing? Throw it away. And then he finally gets sacked for a huge loss. Allen was sacked 5 times for losses of 58 yards. You lost 60 yards? You're losing 12 yards a pop every time you get sacked? And most of them were because Allen was trying to do too much. It's going to be very interesting to see how Josh Allen grows after that game. So now, Super Bowl 55 is set, and hey, we get one of the sexy Super Bowl matchups that we know the NFL and the TV networks were dying to get. We get the defending champion, the Kansas City Chiefs, and their young superstar quarterback taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the aging gunslinger in Tom Brady. Now, remember, Brady is the only guy to beat Mahomes in the playoffs. And even doing that took that goofy offsides penalty. Meanwhile, one thing that's kind of interesting, Patrick Mahomes doesn't really have like a big rivalry quarterback to go against. He kind of needs one. He needs his Joe Frazier. He needs his Detroit Pistons. He needs his Boston Celtics. He doesn't have that. Right now, who would you say Patrick Mahomes' biggest rival is? Well, it's definitely no one in the AFC West, which is horrible. There's not anyone out there right now. But now he gets a rematch with Tom Brady. And I'm telling you right now, it is going to be hyped through the roof. Brady and the Bucks and their opportunistic defense and all of those receiving weapons versus Mahomes and the Chiefs' opportunistic defense and all of his offensive weapons. I mean, we have the young superstar taking on the oldest veteran like ever who is hoping for one last win. Can Tom Brady win his 7th Super Bowl in his 10th try? Be absolutely incredible if he did. Can Patrick Mahomes win his 2nd Super Bowl? And can he do it against Brady? Can he take a step towards catching Brady in his career? Super Bowl 55 should be highly entertaining, and we will be getting you ready for it next week on the Daily Dose. One thing to kind of keep in mind, though. No matter how you pick, you're either picking against Mahomes or you're picking against Tom Brady. It's going to be a tough choice to do either one of those things. Now, here at the Dose, we usually do a year-end show. And our last show of the year, for the last few years, we discuss those who we have lost over the past calendar year. But we did lose an icon in sports last week when Henry Louis Hank Aaron, the Hall of Fame slugger whose 755 career home runs long stood as baseball's golden mark for home runs. Hank Aaron passed away last Friday. He was 86. Now, Aaron spent 21 seasons with the Milwaukee/Atlanta Braves in the National League, and then he also had 2 seasons with the Milwaukee Brewers in the American League. Of course, Aaron is considered one of the greatest baseball players ever. His 755 career home runs broke the long-standing Major League Baseball record set by Babe Ruth, and it stood for over 30 years. But it wasn't just the home runs. Aaron still holds many Major League Baseball batting records. He hit 24 or more home runs every year from 55 to 73. He's one of only 2 players to hit 30 or more home runs in a season at least 15 times. And the funny thing, if you go back and you watch the clips of Hank Aaron, I wasn't really old enough to watch the guy play, but if you go back and you watch the clips, he wasn't this crushing moonshot hitter. He wasn't this massive blast the ball out of the park home run hitter. He was just really deadly and really effective, and he got the ball over the fence. But you know, the biggest thing that stands out to me about Hank Aaron, it wasn't just what he did on the playing field. Hank Aaron was going through a lot of stuff, a lot of really tough stuff at the time as he was overtaking Babe Ruth in America. And through it all, Hank Aaron was a model of class and strength and dignity off the field, as well as what he was doing on the playing field. I know. Barry Bonds broke Hank's record. But Hank Aaron still has to be considered the home run king in my book because he did it without a hypodermic needle hanging out of him. We lost a great one in Hank Aaron, and the sports world definitely feels that. Finally, we finish off this week's news segment with some good news, some positive news, some news we've all been needing in our life. Hey, we haven't had a ton of good news lately. It feels like we need something positive in our lives right now, besides just a stupid coronavirus test.
Come on!
Well, I have something for you today. Because here's some good news, kids. The Pac-12 has announced they are moving on from Commissioner Larry Scott. Now, the move won't become official until June, and it's kind of funny, because the Pac-12 actually dropped this news on Inauguration Day last week, I don't know, like hoping no one would notice, which is kind of hilarious. Because if they really didn't want anyone to notice, they should have announced it on the Pac-12 network. No one would have heard it ever. But this does mark the end of an abysmal 11-year run for one Larry Scott. And I want you to think back about this. Remember back in 2009? Remember when life used to be good? The Pac-12 had just had a dynasty run by USC a few years before in football. Oregon was coming on. Washington was getting better. The Pac-12 sent six teams to the NCAA tournament. They hadn't completely embarrassed themselves. The Pac-12 was still considered a viable, strong athletic conference. And then Larry Scott took over. And first off, he added two teams to the Pac-12. He added Utah and he added Colorado. And he started up that Pac-12 network. Well, let's just get this on the table. Colorado doesn't belong in the Pac-12. They should probably be in the Mountain West. So, strike one. And the Pac-12 network has been an absolute, utter disaster since the very beginning. So, strike two.
You know what they say. Fool me once, strike one. But fool me twice, strike three.
But this last year, with all the COVID-related nonsense, the lack of leadership in the Pac-12, it just completely doomed Larry Scott. I mean, some teams in the Pac-12 played just four games. And it was primarily because Commissioner Larry Scott tried to follow the Big Ten's example. But the big difference was the Big Ten changed what they were doing, and the Pac-12 never did. Now, not everything going on in the Pac-12 was Larry Scott's fault. I understand that. It's not his fault that USC is largely average now. It's not his fault that most Pac-12 schools in the conference don't really want to commit to their programs by paying their coaches top dollar. But he sure didn't leave the conference better than when he found it. And that part of it is fully and entirely on Larry Scott. Now it's going to be interesting to see who they get to take over that job. And that job comes with a lot of problems that need to be fixed. Okay, coming back. We haven't talked much basketball just yet here on The Dose, at least this season. Our focus has still been on football. Well, we have one more football game left. And then we're going to go into that long offseason without football. Well, when we come back, we are going to talk about some of the big storylines in both college basketball and the NBA to keep an eye on this year. Plus, I'm not real happy with college basketball right now. I'm going to let you know why I'm getting very annoyed with college hoops. I'm going to tell you that when we get back. So football is nearly over. College football finished up a couple of weeks ago, and the NFL just has the Super Bowl left. And then we're going to go into that long offseason without football. We're all going to miss football a great deal. It's been very nice having it. But hey, we do have basketball, right? The NBA is rolling along as best they can right now, and college basketball is, well, kind of going, I guess. A lot of games are being postponed, and a lot of games are being canceled, but I think both of these seasons are going to eventually get fully rolling, and they're going to finish in a more normal fashion. We'll have a little bit more time to get these things figured out. But, you know, we haven't talked much about basketball here on The Dose. Not since the NBA season ended, like, what was that, 5 minutes ago or so. I haven't made any bones about the fact that I think the NBA is making some really poor business decisions. You can alienate your fan base if you want to. You can build all these super teams if you want to. You can let the players run the league and do whatever they want, and they can take both their teams and their fans hostage because sometimes the players just don't feel like playing, and you can allow all the flopping nonsense, and you can allow all the bad officiating and all the stupid video reviews for every single call that's made of every single game. I mean, you can do all that stuff if you want to. Just don't expect us all to rush to our TVs to watch your games. Because a lot of that stuff is turning a lot of NBA fans and basketball fans and sports fans in general away from the NBA. But that's the NBA. I guess I'll probably warm up to the NBA eventually. Like maybe when the playoffs get here. Or maybe when next season gets here, whatever. But I'm not even talking about the NBA right now. Daily Dose listener, I am mad right now at college basketball. And I realize that makes no sense because I love college basketball. I coached high school basketball for years. College basketball looks more like the game of basketball that I grew up coaching and playing than that crap that the NBA is rolling out. I love the intensity of college hoops. I love the effort that we see. I love the rivalries that we see in college basketball. And while I know the regular season in college basketball, it needs to be rethought. And this year is even weirder than most. We don't really watch the regular season all that much in college basketball, but we love March Madness, right? So maybe they need to rethink the regular season in college basketball and a way to make it a little more exciting on a night-in, night-out basis. But okay, we'll figure that out maybe eventually. But I'm not very happy with college basketball this year, and I want to tell you why. First off, I'm not mad at the whole situation with this pandemic. Yes, I think some of the things they're doing in college hoops are nonsensical. I mean, these kids are being tested constantly. Fans aren't being allowed into arenas. We literally don't have one single case of spread or sickness linked with an athletic event like on the planet. It hasn't happened indoors or outdoors. So the wearing of the masks and the distancing on the benches, all that might be a little bit theatrical, at least for me. But whatever. At least kids are getting to play. Hopefully, by the time we reach March Madness, the game is starting to look a little bit better. Now, understand this. My issue also isn't with the college basketball players. These kids are trying to play. They're trying to play in really tough circumstances, and they're doing the best they can. I'm rooting for those guys. I'm rooting for the kids in college basketball. No, my issue with college basketball this year has to do with some of the greatest names in the history of the game. And I'm going to name two specific names. Mike Krzyzewski and Kim Mulkey. Both are great coaches, and I mean all-time great coaches. You can make a case that Mike Krzyzewski is the greatest coach in the history of college hoops with what he has done in this era. I mean, Krzyzewski has won 5 Division I titles. He's gone to 12 Final Fours. He's gone to 15 ACC men's basketball tournament championships, and he has won 12 ACC regular season titles. Among men's basketball coaches, only UCLA's John Wooden has won more titles with a total of 10. But that was in a different era. That was in a different situation. Coach K is one of the best ever. And Kim Mulkey is the first person in NCAA women's basketball history to win a national championship as a player, as an assistant coach, and as a head coach. She's only the third NCAA women's basketball coach ever to win 3 national championships, which she has won at Baylor. But I am hearing these two coaching greats say things that go against everything coaches teach. Following back-to-back losses back in December, Mike Krzyzewski said he wasn't sure the season should continue. It might not be safe, he said, and it could get worse. Remember, we haven't had a single hospitalization from sports contests. And you can bet if we had, it would be on the front page of every paper on the planet. It hasn't happened. So please tell me why it's so unsafe for these kids to get to play. Then, just a few weeks ago, Kim Mulkey had this to say, and this is a quote. The season will continue on. It's called the almighty dollar. Please keep in mind that, again, Mulkey said this after her number 6 Lady Bears lost 75-71 to Iowa State, which ended their 61-game home court winning streak. That was the longest winning streak in D1 women's basketball. Her quote continued, the NCAA has to have the almighty dollar from the men's tournament. The almighty dollar is more important than the health and welfare of me, the players, or anybody else. Now again, these are two all-time greats. They are our leaders of young people. These are the people that are teaching our kids how to persevere in tough times in the face of adversity. And they are both whining and crying that we need to quit? This is what leaders do? Storm the beaches at Normandy. Like, that's tough. That's toughness. Let's hide under our beds. It feels like a little less tough to me. And also, not really that smart either, because we can pretend that canceling the college basketball season would be safe. That would fix everything. But would it? So, let's basically have a majority of these kids probably drop out of school, at least for the year, at home doing God knows what instead of being constantly monitored with the best medical care and constant testing at school. Forget the depression, forget the substance abuse, forget the suicides that are exploding across the world right now. These two leaders think it's unsafe to play college basketball. Money's more important than safety. Hey, let's get this on the table. Coach K gets around $9 million per year to coach. Kim Mulkey gets $3 million a year. You want to talk about the NCAA serving the almighty dollar? Put your money where your mouth is and donate your salaries then. Because I don't see that happening. Here's the thing. The players are taking the risk. You're not. And I know we've talked about this here on the Dose before, but yes, of course the NCAA operates on the almighty dollar. What business doesn't? The transmission shop down the street from your house chases the almighty dollar. Everyone does. What Kim Mulkey and Mike Krzyzewski are failing to mention is that most of these programs, most women's programs, in fact, they function based off the money that the men's basketball and football programs make, because they don't make any money. The men's tournament brings in boatloads of money. So do a lot of football programs. And Kim Mulkey directly benefits from it. So does Mike Krzyzewski. He's making his big, huge contract off of the success of March Madness. Hey, we have seen players opt out of their season in the NFL, in the NBA, NHL, college football, college basketball, across the world. Some people don't feel safe participating. That's fine. Opt out. If you don't feel safe, don't go do it. I would encourage Kim Mulkey and Mike Krzyzewski, you probably need to opt out too. See, these kids that are playing, they don't have $9 million a year. They don't get $3 million a year unless they go to, like Arizona. But they are trying to get paid, and this season might be their last chance to do that. And here's the thing. I don't see the players complaining. I don't see them whining about how we need to stop this season. I see them gutting it out and getting out of their comfort zone to chase their dreams. But these two all-time great coaches, they're whining while collecting those fat paychecks. And I don't think it's lost on any of us that both of these leaders made their statements after they lost games. In fact, Krzyzewski made these comments after losing to Alabama. And afterward, Alabama head coach Nate Oates said, "Let me ask you a question. Do you think Coach K would be saying that if he hadn't lost two non-conference games at home?" No, Nate Oates, you're right. He wouldn't. But when these two coaches say things like, "I don't even know why we're doing this," well, you're doing it to get paid. You don't have to do it. Quit. Please. I'm begging you both. If this is your leadership, if this is your lesson to our youth, please quit. Go live in your mansions and take care of your grandkids or whatever, because this isn't leadership. You have choices. You've made your millions. These kids don't. And you know what? Most of us can't do that. Most of us don't have those choices. Do you think the single mom working two jobs has that choice? "I think I'll just take the year off." No, she doesn't. Do you think most people out working on the front lines have that choice? "Well, you know what? I think I'm just going to take a year off." No, most of us don't. But these two do. And they're the ones whining about having to do it. Get over yourselves, Mike Krzyzewski and Kim Mulkey. Be the leaders you're supposed to be, or please quit. Get out and shut up, because this isn't leadership. Losers complain. Winners get things done. Despite all your winning, you two don't sound like winners. Okay, I'm going to try to stop being mad at college basketball. It's not the players' fault. It's not most of the coaches' fault. It's a couple of entitled coaches being idiots and acting like spoiled brats. But let's take a look at some of the major storylines in college basketball. I know it's a weird year, but we still have some things going on in the world of college hoops. And one of the biggest stories this year in college basketball is that the NCAA tournament is going to be changed a little bit. For years, the format has always been the first round is on Thursday and Friday. Then the second round is on Saturday and Sunday. That's not going to be the case this year. So you need to mark this down. When you go to call in sick, even though you're working from home, you're going to call in sick because, you know, you just want to watch college hoops all day. Make sure you don't call in for that Thursday and that Friday, because this year, the first round will be Friday, March 19th and Saturday, March 20th. Then the second round will be the Sunday and the Monday. So if you're going to call in sick, you need to do it for the Friday and the Monday, not the Thursday and the Friday. Don't call in sick for Thursday, because if you do, the only thing that's going to be on is that stupid first four that no one cares about. So there is that change. Now let's get to the actual teams and the actual players. We do have a big dog in college hoops this year. No, it's not Mike Krzyzewski in Duke. No, it's not John Calipari in Kentucky. It is the Gonzaga Bulldogs, and the Zags are rolling. They have already beaten Kansas. They've already beaten Iowa. They've already beaten West Virginia. They've already beaten Virginia, and they're beating these teams easily by like an average of double digits. Now, they are cruising through their West Coast Conference like as usual, but the Zags are averaging 94 points per game. If you're going to beat Gonzaga this year, you better bring it, because they are the big dog in college basketball. Make no mistake about that. Speaking of Duke and Kentucky, yeah, they're not doing so hot. No wonder Coach K wanted to cancel the season. Duke is now hovering at around 500. Kentucky, wishes they could get to around 500, because they're under 500. Now, I expect both of these programs to get better down the stretch. They're both very young. They both haven't always been healthy. But Kentucky and Duke, they're struggling. And there is actually some new blood this year in college basketball. So if you're thinking already about your March Madness bracket that you're going to be filling out, and that is the first thing we think about when we think of college hoops, right? You might want to warm up to some different teams. Not Duke or Kentucky. You might want to think about teams like Baylor, Iowa, Texas, who is finally playing really well under head coach Shaka Smart. Tennessee is back. They look good. Houston, Florida State, Virginia Tech, Creighton. Some of the traditional powers in college basketball are having a rough season. And some lesser known teams actually seem to be true contenders. It could be a very fun tournament in college hoops this year. So who are some of the top players? And while we are used to the top players, again, being from some of those blue blood programs, the top player in the country, at least in college basketball, is probably Iowa's big man Luke Garza. But here's the other thing to think about. Oklahoma State freshman point guard Cade Cunningham, he is the projected number one pick in the NBA draft by a lot of publications for 2021. So, a point guard from Oklahoma State, a big point guard from Oklahoma State, kind of looks like the top player. USC big man Evan Mobley is a defensive monster. He could be a top pick. Gonzaga has a very good point guard in Jalen Suggs. He's very intelligent. He's a solid playmaker. Always seems to make the right choices. And Florida State's Scotty Barnes, he's a really efficient scorer, and NBA teams are going to love him as well. So some of the top players are coming from schools that maybe aren't the ones that first come to mind. So which conferences are going to be the ones to watch in college basketball this year? Because sometimes, hey, when we fill out our March Madness brackets and you're not sure who to pick, what do we do? Well, what conference do they play in and what conference do they play in? It doesn't always work, because sometimes conferences beat each other up. Plus, sometimes there's a conference you just don't know. But if we're looking at the top conferences this year, we should probably start with the Big Ten. If the tournament were selected right now, the Big Ten would probably get either 10 or 11 teams in. And I know when you first hear that, that makes no sense. But remember, the Big Ten does not consist of 10 teams. It consists of 14 teams. So the Big 14 would be getting in probably 10 or 11 teams. Pretty good conference. The Big 10 is absolutely stacked. Next up would probably be the Big 12, but here's what's weird about the Big 12 this year. Kansas, who wins the Big 12 every year, who owns the Big 12 every year, they might not be the big dog, because Kansas can't seem to play any defense. So you have teams like Baylor and Texas, Oklahoma, West Virginia, Texas Tech. They are going to make things very, very difficult for those Kansas Jayhawks. And then I would probably place the Big East in the mix for the top conference in the country too. Creighton. I watched them a little bit this last weekend. They are tough. They are physical. Of course, Jay Wright has Villanova playing their usual tough brand, hard-nosed basketball up in Philadelphia. But even teams like Providence, Seton Hall, Marquette, they can all be contenders. So, as different maybe as this year is, the top conferences, yeah, they're probably still the top conferences. The Big Ten, the Big 12, and the Big East, they usually are right up there. I realize that this college basketball season has been a little tough to warm up to. There have been so many postponements. There have been so many cancellations. And then we've had coaches whining, all that stuff. But I'm really hoping that as we get further into spring, and hopefully things begin to calm down a little bit, college basketball might be able to get back to the March Madness that we know and love and generate the usual excitement that we expect from that tournament that we missed so much last year. Okay, I'm done being mad at college basketball. I'm going to put that behind me. I'm going to move on to other things. I'm back in love with college basketball. Let's get this season in and let's make it good. Let's flip over to the NBA though, because We also haven't talked too much about that either, primarily because we didn't want you listeners to just stop listening to the show. But let's take a real brief look at what to expect in the NBA this year. First off, can anyone beat the Los Angeles Lakers? And the answer is pretty easy. No. Once again, we have a super team that is going to dominate all competition and make this season, honestly, pretty boring. Because the Lakers are an all-star team. They have LeBron. They have Anthony Davis. Now they have Dennis Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell. And everyone else is just playing for second place. I'll say this. If the Los Angeles Lakers don't win the NBA title this year, it will be a monumental failure. Because they are loaded. And they are way better than everyone else. But if we had to pick a few contenders, is there anyone that we can kind of pretend could maybe compete with the Lakers? I guess. We can say that the three-headed monster of James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving, they should make the Brooklyn Nets a contender, right? And they're playing really, really well to start. And even goofy Kyrie, coming back from whatever sabbatical he was on, he came back and played really, really well. But does anyone really think that collection of prima donnas is going to go anywhere? I certainly don't. I fully expect them to melt down. The Philadelphia 76ers are playing surprisingly well to start this NBA season. But we all know what head coach Doc Rivers usually does in the playoffs, right? So like a first round loss to, the Knicks? Yeah, it's totally possible is what I'm saying. I guess we can talk about the Utah Jazz in the West, the Milwaukee Bucks in the East, or even maybe the LA Clippers are going to put things together and press the Lakers. But I don't think any of those teams can beat the Lakers. Not in a 7-game series, maybe once here or there, but not over 7 games. So no, I don't really think there is a contender out there that can really put that much pressure on the Los Angeles Lakers. So are there any surprises whatsoever then in this year's NBA? Well, yeah, I think there's a couple. For one, the Phoenix Suns have started off pretty strong. I know they're fading a little bit lately, but the Phoenix Suns can contend for the playoffs now that they have Chris Paul. But I think the biggest surprise in the league right now has to be the early starts by the Cleveland Cavaliers and the New York Knicks. Do you realize that if the NBA playoffs started today, granted it's only January, the Cavs would be the Eastern Conference's 6th seed and the Knicks would get into the playoffs as the 8th seed? And I actually like some of what they are doing. It's not a complete hoax. Like, Colin Sexton seems to be a legitimate star for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And the Knicks, they are playing so hard for new head coach Tom Thibodeau. Now, will it last for either one of these teams? No, I don't think it will. But hey, enjoy these two early season surprises because I don't think the NBA is going to have that many surprises in 2021. So you better enjoy these ones that we do see with the Cavs and the Knicks, maybe a little bit with the Jazz or Phoenix. Because other than that, I think we already pretty much know how this story is going to end. Okay, coming back, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. You might not realize this. Maybe you haven't heard. But 2020 is now over. What? It is now 2021. Not only that, last week, here in the United States, we inaugurated a brand new president. So, all of our problems are gone, right? Everything's good again. Well, not quite. But here at the Daily Dose, we are in the business of helping people. And when we get back, our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to do our best to help out not just this country. The Daily Dose Top 5 today is looking to help out the entire planet. Now, as we do so many weeks, not every week, but a lot of weeks, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Kids, it has been a rough year, like calendar year. I'm not talking about 2021 just yet, but like the last calendar year has been rough. We have a global pandemic on our hands. We've had political unrest. Morons that you and I went to school with are now like spitting politics on social media. That's been rough. We've had sickness. We've had death. We've had loss of jobs, suicides, overdoses, financial ruin. But today there is hope. Numerous companies have now released vaccinations that they say will minimize the death count and help us all to begin to get back on our feet. Here is the problem that we are seeing right now. The distribution of said vaccine has been a little bit slow. And I know it's shocking that our governments across the world might not be that efficient, right? Like, that's shocking news. Who knew? Governments are known for getting things done quickly and efficiently, aren't they?
Have you been to the Motor Vehicle Bureau? It's a leper colony down there.
Case in point, I applied for some new license plates for our car back in October. They cashed the check. We are still waiting on said plates. So, you can change presidents. You can change politicians. You can do whatever you want. Government workers are notoriously slow at everything they do. Like, it's in their DNA. So while there are so many of us waiting for this vaccine to change our worlds, the governments around the world, they don't really know how to pick up the pace of anything they do. It's just how they are. They can't change. So here's the thing. If we are expecting them to hurry up and get this process moving quicker, we're probably going to be disappointed. Therefore, today on the Daily Dose, I have a solution. In fact, I've got five solutions. Today, our Daily Dose top five is counting down five other alternatives that I would trust a little more to distribute the vaccination way, way faster than any of our governments across the world are doing. Let's start off at number five. And I guess if I'm going to get a guy that can get the vaccine out quickly and efficiently, I'm going to go with the guy that is one of the greatest passers of all time. It's not just that, but it definitely rates in the equation. See, here's the thing. John Stockton is the NBA's all-time leader in assists with nearly 16,000 assists over his incredible career. He's in first place. You know who's in second place? Jason Kidd. He's clear back at 12,000. Over 4,000 more assists. And the leading active player playing today, Chris Paul, is back in seventh place. He hasn't even reached 10,000 yet. So John Stockton, yeah, I think he could do a better job. And here's the thing about Stockton. It wasn't just his passing. He was so smart. He was so unselfish. And he was way tougher than so many people that never got to see him play will ever give him credit for. Yeah, I have a feeling John Stockton could get this vaccine out way faster than any of our governments could. And for that reason, he comes in today at number five. We move on to number four. And we get to a guy who is definitely in his prime right now. And I mean in his prime. He's only 25 years old. He is already going to his second Super Bowl in a row. But I have some crazy stats here about Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes has never played a road playoff game or been anything except for the one or the two seed in the playoffs. He has never lost a game in the NFL by more than 8 points. He has never lost a playoff game in the NFL in regulation. He has never lost a playoff game before championship weekend. Also, he has now made it to two Super Bowls and he's not even 26 years old yet. We saw on Sunday, Patrick Mahomes was in the grasp of being sacked. Somehow, he still gets the pass off for the completion. Hey, getting this vaccine out, it's not going to be easy. But you know who I know can succeed under pressure? Yeah, Patrick Mahomes. He's only 25. He's already making a Hall of Fame type of resume. Yeah, I think this guy can get it done. Patrick Mahomes comes in on our list today at number four. We arrive at our number three entry. And I have a guy that without a doubt can get things done. He was another fantastic passer, but you know what? With our number three guy, it's way more than just passing. He could do it all. And get this. This guy even has experience dealing with viruses. Yes, of course, I'm talking about Irvin Magic Johnson. Here is something that is crazy for you to think about right now. And maybe you're too young to know this, but back in the late 80s or early 90s, if you got the HIV virus, yeah, it was a death sentence. Not a maybe, not a perhaps. You were in some big trouble. Not for Magic Johnson. He was diagnosed with HIV back in 91. Somehow that dude actually got in better shape. Like, how weird is that? Because anyone who got that virus, they were not doing well. And you know, brief side note, hate to go off on a tangent, but one thing I've noticed is our change in mentality. Like back in the late 80s, early 90s, no one was telling people never have sex again because HIV is out there. Don't have sex. You'll kill grandma. No one was saying that, or whoever. I'm not saying you had sex with grandma, whatever. Not like now, because people are now saying, like, don't go to the store. You'll kill the old people. I'm not sure when our mentality shifted, but it is a little weird because back then everyone was just like, just be careful. Just be careful. Just wear condoms. Just make sure you're practicing safe sex. We don't really say that now. We're like, I don't know, throw on a mask or just stay at home. Stay under your bed. It would be safer if you just stayed under your bed. Okay, side note done. Anyways, magic beat one virus that was way, way more deadly than this one. I'm pretty sure Magic Johnson can help with this one too. And he was a great playmaker. He was a great passer. Magic Johnson can get the vaccine out. Come on, Magic. Bring back Showtime. We're counting on you. Magic Johnson comes in at number 3. I want people on this list today that are just guaranteed to get the job done. I want people that produce. I want people that can do it all. So now we reach our number 2 guy, and he could do it all. He has more assists in the history of his sport than anyone ever. He has more goals in the history of his sport than anyone ever. He has more points than anyone ever. In fact, if you took away all of Wayne Gretzky's 900 goals, he would still be the NHL's all-time points leader based on the fact that he had nearly 2,000 assists. Jaromir Jagr is under 2,000 points in second place. You can take away all of Gretzky's goals. He's still in first place as a point scorer. But Wayne Gretzky was called the Great One for a reason. He was completely unstoppable. He put up nearly 3,000 points. Number 2 is clear back 1,000 points back. Gretzky was so fast. He was so accurate. He was so smooth. He was so much better than anyone else who has ever played the game of hockey. I'm pretty confident that Wayne Gretzky would be a natural to help us get this vaccine out quickly. Plus, he's Canadian. You know those people that live in America's hat? They're just nice. They're just nice people. The Great One? Yeah, he could get this vaccine out easily. He could get it out efficiently. We need to get Wayne Gretzky on this project. We reach our number 1 entry on people that we need to get involved in the distribution of this vaccine worldwide. And I debated on this one for a while. Because I need someone that can deal with mass crowds. I need someone that is used to being overwhelmed every single day on the job, but they don't really care. They just move right through it and they just push past that stuff. Who can process people fast? Who can maintain a high quality of cleanliness? Who can make sure they're still being polite and being helpful in every single way? And no, for our number 1 entry, I'm not looking at a sports superstar. I'm not even looking at the medical field. Hey, I love our frontline workers. But have you been to an ER? You might sit there for 3 hours with like a hatchet in your face. No, I need someone that pushes people through fast, clean, efficient, polite. Yes, kids, if we want this vaccine to get out and we want our world to go back to some sense of normalcy, we need to get this vaccine to In-N-Out Burger because those people are amazing. And there's no way they couldn't get this done way faster than any government in the world. Come on, new President Joe Biden. Make this happen. We can get on top of this pandemic if we seek the right help. And I'm telling you right now, In-N-Out is the right help. They can get this done. Hey, next week on The Dose, we will be getting you ready for Super Bowl 55 like no one else can. And I'm telling you right now, we have the record to prove it. We have picked Super Bowls pretty accurately during our time here at The Dose. So if you need a little help, maybe you're doing some betting, maybe you're just doing some friendly wagering, or maybe it's just purely for entertainment purposes, I'm telling you right now, you need to tune into the Daily Dose Sports Podcast next week and make sure you tell a friend to do the same. Hey, I have to say thank you all to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing to our YouTube channel. Thank you for giving us positive ratings wherever it is you watch or listen. But more than anything else, thank you so much for sharing a show with a friend, a coworker, a family member. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Have you been to the Motor Vehicle Bureau? It's a leper colony down there.